Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part one of The Gospel in Rome. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 1, verse 5, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
He says, through him, and of course he's speaking of Christ, through him we have received grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name, among whom you also are the called of Jesus Christ. So Paul is speaking of himself here and the other apostles, but he says that it's through Christ that they received grace and apostleship. Now, what he's probably saying here is they received the grace to be apostles. So combining not two separate things, receiving grace and apostleship, but actually receiving the grace unto apostleship. So as Paul would point out in some of his other epistles, his calling as an apostle, he understood that to be purely by the grace of God. He understood that it had nothing to do with his own qualification. It certainly had nothing to do with his own goodness or anything like that. He completely understood that his salvation, his calling into ministry, his apostleship, all of this was because of God's grace. And of course, the same is true for us. Whatever it is that we might do, beginning, of course, just initially with our salvation, but whatever we might do in our service for the Lord, whatever he might call us to, whatever he might involve us in, you know, at the end of the day, when we look back, we would just have to say, well, you know, it was all because of the grace of God. We could never figure it out. We could never tag a reason onto it like, well, you know, God just knew that I was going to be faithful, or God knew that I had something that he needed to get his will accomplished in the earth. If I ever start thinking like that, I'm on the wrong track and I need to get my thinking process sorted out. It's always going to be by the grace of God that we do whatever we do. And so Paul had received grace for this apostleship. And notice now that the apostleship is for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. So this was the apostolic ministry. The apostolic ministry was to take the gospel to the nations. And in taking the gospel to the nations, it was to produce an obedient people, a people who would glorify the name of the Lord. And so these men, the apostles, they were not stationary like pastors are. They were not settled in one particular location necessarily. They might have had sort of a home base. Paul seemed to have made his home base Antioch, but he was constantly going out because that was the ministry of an apostle. He was to go out to the nations. Now, when we read the word nation in our New Testament in particular, I don't think we can help but think of nations like we understand them today. But what the Bible's talking about and what we think of are not exactly the same. When the New Testament is talking about the nations, the Greek word is actually ethnos. And so we know that word from our word ethnic, right? So it's the gospel is to go out to all of the various groups of people that you would find all over the planet. Back in that time of history, there were not nations as we know them today. The way the world is today, as we understand it, being divided up into various nations, this is a relatively new development. But back then, of course, you had various empires, and you had, generally, you had people groups that would be gathered together around their ethnicity. And so we obviously still have that to some degree today as well. But the gospel is to go out to everybody. That's the point. There's no one in the world that the gospel is not for. Now, the liberal-minded person would say, well, you know, and these are the ones that are being really nice, Christianity is for Western people. It's the religion of the West, they would say. And it's fine. You're born in the West, you ought to be a Christian. That's the religion of the West. But the East has different religious systems. And they would say, of course, all of these are equally legitimate. All of them are valid. You know, if you're born in the West, then you would naturally be a Christian. But if you're born in the Middle East, you'd probably be a Muslim, possibly. If you're born further east, you'd probably be a Buddhist or a Hindu, they would say. So in their thinking, there isn't really a need for evangelism. We don't need to go make Buddhists into Christians. We don't need for Hindus to become Christians. We don't need for Muslims to become Christians. That's a very popular attitude today among many people. But that's certainly not what Jesus said, is it? Jesus said to his disciples that they were to go and make disciples of all of the ethnic groups on the planet. And Paul is saying here that that's exactly what he was commissioned to do as an apostle. He was given grace by Jesus Christ to take the gospel message to all of the people on the earth. Now, of course, none of the apostles got to everybody on the planet, but they laid the foundation, and the work of Christ carried on beyond their generation, and the gospel continued to spread, and it continues to spread right down to this very day. And even today, there are new ethnic groups of people that are being won to Christ by missionaries, by people going out into areas where the gospel has never gone, and they're fulfilling that commission that Jesus gave. Now, I think it's interesting here that Paul uses the word obedience. Grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith among all the nations for his name's sake. He uses the word obedience, and I find that interesting because that's really the objective. The idea that you could somehow believe in Jesus but yet not obey him is foreign to the New Testament text. Obedience is, in some senses, it's really sort of a synonym with the word belief, the New Testament word belief. We often think of belief as just intellectual assent. We acknowledge that something is true mentally, but that's not biblical belief. Biblical belief is not simply the acknowledgement that something is true, but it's the embracing of that truth to the extent that it impacts my life. So what God intended the gospel to do as we receive it is transform our life, turn us from disobedient people into obedient people, turn us from godless people to becoming godly people, turn us from unrighteous people to becoming righteous people. And so that was the mission that the Lord sent the apostles on. And Paul says to them, among whom you also are the called of Jesus Christ. Now, remember earlier, Paul talked about the fact that he had been called to be an apostle. And now he's talking to the believers in Rome about their calling to be the children of God, about their calling to be Christians. It is true that we are called. The call for salvation has gone out to every single person. But of course, not every single person is going to respond. So the many that are called is a reference to everybody, but the ones that are chosen is a reference to those who heed the call. And so Paul here, in addressing the believers in Rome, he is confident that they are the chosen. They are the ones who have heeded the call. Later in this epistle, Paul would write these words. He would say, "Whom he foreknew, he also predestined. And whom he predestined, he called. Whom he called, he justified. And whom he justified, he also glorified." So you see there, foreknew, predestined, called, justified, glorified. So there's a general call that goes out to all men, but the effectual call goes out to those that he has foreknown. God knows in advance those that will respond to his invitation of grace. And so it's those that will respond that he then predestines to be conformed to the image of his son, and it's those that he calls with this effectual call. He calls you by name. I mean, just think of it. You know, here you are, you're just a face in the crowd, and the call is going out. Salvation is available. It's free for anyone who wants to be saved. Come, and there you are, you're kind of just, oh, okay, salvation, somebody's making a call. But then all of a sudden, Brian Broderson, you are called to be saved. Whoa. At that point, I'm going to stop and I'm going to listen, right? Because there's a specific call there. That is true of every believer. So we could look at it as we have been called by name. And Paul, in writing to these saints in Rome, that's what he's saying to them. He says, "You also are the called of Jesus Christ. To all who are in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ." So Paul tells them they're called. He tells them that they're loved of God. He tells them that they're called not to be saints, but actually he says they're called saints. Notice the two little words there, "to be," are italicized. And in case you don't know this, whenever you see italicized words in your Bible, those are inserted by the translators to help the flow of the sentence. And generally they do that. But here you don't even necessarily need those words, because we're not only called to be saints, we are called saints. That's what God has called us. He's called us saints. But if you think about that for a moment, really, you know, some of these things, we read them, we don't give a whole lot of thought to it, but, you know, if you just sit and ponder for a minute, the fact that you've been called by God, God has called you. He's called you by name. He's called you to come and be a part of his family. He's called you to come and share in the love that he has for you. He's called you, apart from this world that's perishing, to come and join him in a world that's going to go on forever and ever. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff. But like I said, I think sometimes we can just blow right past this. This is introductory stuff. We don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but we ought to spend more time thinking about these things, thinking about who this God is, this God who's made everything that there is. He's made the entire universe. He's made us. And then he's called us to come and be part of his family. What a glorious thing. Now, in verse 8, Paul begins to now address them in Rome. He's finished now his greeting. And now he says, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. So Paul is letting them know right off the top that he's excited about what he hears is going on in Rome. Now, remember, we pointed this out. Paul had not been to Rome at this point. Paul did not have any involvement in the establishing of this church. As we pointed out in a previous study, we don't know who started the church in Rome. We know ultimately the Lord started it. But Paul had never been there. But he had friends there. He had associates there. And he had a longing to go there. But he'd never been there. So the first thing he says to them, he says, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. So that church in Rome, everybody was talking about that church in Rome. And, you know, there are some churches where you just sense the Lord is at work. And you know what happens with those churches? The word gets out. And people start hearing all over the place. And then you go somewhere and you meet somebody and they tell you, well, I'm from such and such a church. Oh, man, I've heard of that church. Tell me about what's going on there. And that's the way it works. It kind of just spreads all around the world. There's that testimony that's gone out. And there's that excitement and there's that admiration in some sense. And there's that respect for what God's done. And that was what was happening with the church in Rome as well. Paul had heard of all that God was doing there, and he was rejoicing. He was thanking God for their faith that was spoken of throughout the whole world. And then he says in verse 9, for God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. So Paul calls God to witness here. And he says something that is interesting. He says that he serves God with his spirit in the gospel of his Son. Many in Paul's day, and especially where Paul had previously been, they seemed to serve God, but they did not do it with their spirit, or they did not do it with their heart, in other words. That's what he's talking about. What Paul's really doing right here is he's essentially saying, I'm not just going through the motions. I'm not just caught up in rituals or duties or anything like that. Paul says, no, I do this thing with my heart. And it's significant that Paul says that because the Pharisees, of course, would have been, to a large degree, they would have been guilty of serving God not with their heart, not with their spirit, but they would have served God mechanically, externally, just keeping the rules and the regulations outwardly to look good to men, but in their hearts, they were impure and they were wicked. But Paul says, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his Son. It was real, in other words, to Paul. And you know what was true of the Pharisees in that day? Sadly, it's true of some people in ministry today. You could find in positions today of leadership in churches, you could find men who are there for every other reason than because their heart is in it. Some are there because it's just a job. It's just what you do. Some are there because you might get a good salary and a good retirement plan. Some are there because it makes them feel good to benevolently reach out to people, or all different kinds of motives that people have for getting into ministry or being in ministry. Sometimes it's just sheer pride. I like having some power. I like having authority over other people. I like being looked up to. I like people to call me pastor, things like that. Some people are in the ministry for those kinds of reasons, sadly. But it wasn't the case with Paul. Paul said that he served God with his spirit. His whole heart was in what he did. And that should always be true of us. We should be serving the Lord with our spirit. We should always be serving the Lord with our whole heart, not just going through the motions. And you know, we need to guard our hearts against that, because we can all slip into that at times where we're just going through the motions. You know, I have to confess, there are times when I'm singing songs and my brain is somewhere else completely. You know, I'm lip syncing, basically. I know the words and I'm singing, but I'm not engaging in my mind. I'm not thinking about what the words of the song are. I'm not necessarily focusing on the Lord. I'm saying that because it's a reality for all of us. We have to constantly be checking our hearts. Wait, where am I at with this? What am I doing with this? And even sometimes when we're involved in some sort of service to the Lord. You know, if we're serving the Lord but complaining the whole time we're doing it, if we're griping about it, well, what do I have to do this for? Well, this isn't what I signed up to do. I thought I was going to get to do this other thing. I don't want to do this. Well, then you have to really ask, where is your heart at? You see, we should be doing whatever we do with a heart for the Lord. Paul would say this later in writing to the Colossians, didn't he? He said, whatever you do, do it with all your heart as to the Lord and not to men. He's talking about the same thing right here. This is what he says. He says, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his son. And because he's doing this with his heart, he would then go on to say that without ceasing, I make mention of you in my prayer. You know, if you don't have a heart for the ministry, you won't pray for the ministry. You won't pray for anybody in the ministry. It'll just be mechanical. It'll just be external. You'll just show up when it's the appropriate time to show up, and you'll do that thing that everybody sees you do, and you'll feel good about it, then you'll walk away, but you won't think about it afterwards. You won't pray for the people that you ministered to. But you see, if your heart's in it, like Paul's was, he could say, I serve God with my spirit in the gospel of his son, and go on then to say in the same breath that without ceasing, I make mention of you always in my prayers. He's a true servant of God, in other words. Well, he prayed many things, but he mentions one specific thing here, making request, he said. If by some means, now at last, I may find a way in the will of God to come to you. So Paul was praying for them, and as he would pray for them, he would add to that prayer, Lord, let me go to Rome. I want to go there. I want to see those people. I want to reconnect with those believers I know, and I want to see those believers that I've never met face to face. Lord, I want to go see that work that you're doing there. That's what Paul was praying. And so he says, for I long to see you. I long to see you that I may impart to you some spiritual gift so that you may be established, that is, that I may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith, both of you and me. So Paul wants to go to Rome, and he wants to go there because he wants to bring a blessing to the people. He wants to go there and build them up in the faith. That's his heart. He wanted to get to Rome, not because he wanted to tour Rome. Wasn't that he wanted to go there on vacation. He wanted to go there and minister. And he had it in his heart, all of those things that Christ had taught him, all of the things that he had experienced, he wants to come and personally share these things with the fellowship in Rome. But not only that, he says, not only do I want to come and bless you, but I know that when I come, I'm going to be blessed as well. There's going to be a mutual blessing. And Paul was absolutely right. That is so often the case. We go out at times going to places thinking and hoping and longing, understandably, to be a blessing. When you go somewhere, you want to bless the people that you go to visit. But we find so often that we get more blessed than the people. We get blessed by going. We get blessed by what the Lord does through the folks that we get to have those beautiful ministry times with.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part one of The Power of the Gospel. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Gospel of God. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT-0101. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com. Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.